Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording from our November 15th, 11:15 a.m. service. The topic is Just Gender. The speakers are Kathleen Frosten and Penny Ritterbush, Susan and Cindy Britton with Reverend Bruce Bodie. Thanks for listening.
When Bruce first got in touch with me about 6 weeks ago and asked if Penny and I would be willing to be a part of the service with Susan and Cindy, I must admit I was a little reluctant. It's been 15 years now since I underwent sexual reassignment surgery, and you know, I've really gotten used to just being my Kathleen self, and all my interaction with you, I've enjoyed just being a normal female. Over time, though, you know, in various different places and with different people, I've begun to be more forthright about my history, and with Penny's support, too, I've become more comfortable with just being out and sort of being my transgender self. So I still hope that my interaction with all you will just be as my female Kathleen senior citizen self. But anyway, so obviously while I want to be normal, my journey has certainly not been a normal journey. So let me give you a little chronology. I don't really understand at a deep level why or how this all happened to me, but I know something about it. So I was born in New York, lived there from ages 1 to 5 with my family. I had an older sister, 9 years older than myself. And I must say, you know, I don't have any memory of any of these things really, but I look back in retrospect saying, oh, yeah, this must have had an impact on me. At any rate, and with some therapy too, people, you know, therapists have said, oh, yeah, that probably was significant. So at any rate, when my sister was 10, she fell off a roof and damaged her leg, and she wore a leg brace. From the time when I was probably like 1 or so until I was maybe 5. And apparently, my seeing her get all this love and extra attention from my parents had an impact on me in some way. My therapists say, well, you must have really wanted that love and attention desperately, and you, in your illogical toddler mind, said, well, I guess in order to get that, you have to be, you know, disabled and female. As much as that doesn't make any sense, you know, I look back and say, yeah, that must have had an impact. But at any rate, I went on to a normal grade school life. I was a normal rough and tumble little boy. But one thing that I do remember very vividly, back in the 1950s in my grade school, do you remember those March of Dimes posters they used to put up everywhere? Well, there was this one poster with this little girl in braces, and I was just like awestruck by this. Somehow I wanted to be that little girl. But as a 6 or 7 year old, I knew that wasn't reality. You know, I knew that was just a fantasy. And from there, I went on to a normal, you know, growing up life in grade school. When I got to puberty, I was just a normal teenage boy. I knew I liked girls more than boys. I was never, ever had any inkling of being gay. And, you know, maybe like a 15 or 16 year old boy, I don't know exactly what everybody's behavior is like, but maybe they use pictures of girls to maybe get them aroused at teenage years. Well, I did that like every other teenager, but still the strongest fantasy I had that would get me most aroused was this image of myself as a disabled female. gradually over time, the image of being disabled and embraces, that part went away. But the image of myself as female never went away. And I went on to a normal married life, but every once in a while, this fantasy would interfere with my normal sexual relationships with my wife. But really, I had a primarily just a straight, normal male life. I went on to college, and then I went into graduate school in psychology. I kind of went into psychology on the rebound. I had been 7 years a Catholic seminary student. I was training to be a priest. What an irony that is. I don't know. Anyway, I was thinking about going back to my 50th college reunion one of these days, and I'm thinking, that's going to be quite a shock for all those. Anyway, but I went on to have a regular married life, 4 kids, a career, you know, really actually a wonderful marriage of 29 years. And I still really love and like my former wife. And so we were a good team. And I think I was a pretty good dad. But somewhere in midlife, maybe 48, 49-ish or so, kids were all grown at that point, off to college, and some of them were out of college. One was still in, I think. A huge depression came over me. And I don't know, I guess it was maybe the strangest and strongest midlife crisis anybody's ever had. I don't know, but I was really seriously depressed. I was bored with life. I was bored with myself, bored with my job. I just, the meaning had sort of ebbed away for me. But something around then just overcame me. I was overcome with the notion that, in fact, I should have been female from the very beginning, and that if I had been, or if I could be now, the passion and the wonder of life would return to me. And it was like, I don't know if you remember when you first fell in love, but it was like falling in love. There was this tiny sexual element to it, but that was really just a small part. The big part was the emotional, the power of the emotion of being in love. It's a little bit illogical, obviously. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it was there, and it overtook me. And let me look at my notes for a second. So having these feelings, you know, I knew this was going to cause enormous trauma in my life if I did anything about it. So I sought help in visual therapy, and I went to the Ingersoll Gender Center in Seattle that was, you know, a lot of other people like myself who were having these kinds of feelings. But, and although no matter what kind of therapy I had, I knew these feelings weren't going to go away, still I was aware of the terrible trauma that this would cause for my wife and my kids if I ever allowed myself to kind of go in this direction. And that pain was just profound. And I thought about suicide, but in the end I thought, no, you have to give yourself a chance. You know, I was aware that it would seem selfish to so many people. It would seem selfish to my wife. It would seem selfish to my kids. But it was either that or maybe suicide. And I just finally decided that I had to live my passion for who I needed to be. Because when I thought about that, it gave me tremendous energy and joy. And I just thought, I can live the next 30 years this way and I'll be a much better person. And So as I say, it's been 15 years now since all that happened, and my relationships with my wife, thank God, my former wife, have dramatically improved. We're good friends at this point, and I have good relationships with my kids, thank God, because a lot of transgendered people aren't that lucky. They lose their whole family. But I guess in summary, I'll just say I still don't fully understand it. You know, it just kind of is what it is. But with Penny's love and support, I've become much more comfortable with being with full disclosure, so that all of you would know my history. And I still hope that I'll get to interact with you as my Kathleen self, but in the knowledge that you now understand that you know the whole situation. So thank you.
Good. Thank you, Kathleen. And so Susan and Cindy, you've just recently come to this area and recently connected with us. So Susan, could you tell us a little bit about your history and background? And
good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming out today to listen to our stories. It's our personal stories are very unique, but everyone has a unique story. So let me tell you a little bit about mine. I was born in England in 1957, and the day I was born, I was wrapped in a blue blanket. I wasn't asked what gender I wanted to be or felt. I was just, it was assumed that I was male. At 3 years of age, I had a day that is still etched in my memory when I discovered that I had been born in the wrong body. I was thrown into a bathtub with a load of other kids and realized that I had the wrong anatomy, that I wasn't a girl. And from that moment in 1960 until 2010, when I started taking estrogen, every day I had that gnawing, aching feeling that I had been born in the wrong body. And for a lot of people, they don't understand that. They're like, well, but you know, this is something that just grows on you as you grow older, but it's not. For most transgendered people, we all have unique stories and different paths. This is a very common trait that at a very young age, we know that something is not right. We don't have the language to explain it, but we know something's not right. At age 5, I think in younger years, we get away with a lot of playing with other kids with no gender roles. But suddenly in school, it's boys and girls. And my first day at primary school in England was a big loss for transgendered rights that day. I gave in with a whimper, but it was a devastating day for me because I remember the boys lined up here, the girls lined up here. The boys sat here, the girls sat there. And I guess that's something that continued throughout my life. I went to an all-boys private school, Catholic boarding school in England when I was 8 till I was 18. And there I learned all of society's unwritten rules and how to survive. Because the one thing as a transgendered person is we don't want anybody to know. It's a little different than just being gay. We could have gone to a wedding and I could have said, well, maybe Bob is gay, I'm not sure. They'd seem like a very happy couple, but once we come out, as we do now, it's a very different conversation that begins. So anyway, I went through my school years, dropped out of college after a year, very confused, drinking very heavily to self-medicate. At 23, I emigrated to America and immediately got involved with the tall ship business and became a tall ship captain. I guess I really wanted to be the figurehead at the front of the boat rather than the captain at the back. Anyway, met Cindy in 1983. She was sailing on a tall ship. They came in late at night into an anchorage in St. Thomas. We fell madly in love. And love, you believe, will conquer all. And I really believe that love was going to cure me of this gnawing, aching feeling that I was born in the wrong body. Having a son in 1985, holding that little kid in the hospital, I really believed that this was behind me now, that this feeling that I should have been born a woman was going to go away, and it didn't. 4 years with John Hopkins University in Baltimore in their transgendered program didn't fix it. In fact, I came out of there in worse shape than I went in, because back then they couldn't imagine two women raising a family, let alone a transgendered woman and a woman raising a family. And I felt like I had trapped my wife, Cindy, and my son in this web of deceit and lies and self-loathing that I didn't want anybody to have be part of. So anyway, kind of not real suicide attempts, but constant thoughts of suicide continued throughout my life as we raised our son and moved and I worked. I mean, very good worker. I present very well as a boat captain, did a very good job, but I had that word but at the end of every sentence. It was a great day, but I love my job, but this is a wonderful family event, but, and that is that word, B-U-T, took me out finally in 2009 when, as a man, I'd run out of all options and I couldn't go on. And funnily enough, for a lot of transgendered people, they either tend to come out early in their life, in their teens and 20s, or they seem to put it off, and suddenly in their 50s, it becomes overwhelming and almost takes us to the depths of suicide. Anyway, I found a wonderful therapist, and her first question me, I'd been through 20 years of therapy up to now, locked up with police and therapists and all that kind of stuff. But she said, okay, I'm going to ask you a question. You had three brothers, you went to an all-boys private boarding school, and you work in a male-dominated industry. Don't you think at 53 you would have got the message that you're supposed to be a man? Maybe, just maybe, do you think you might just be a transgendered woman? And I said, I think you're right. And she says, well, you have two options now. You can transition to Susan, or you're probably going to kill yourself in the next few years, which is very common amongst transgendered people in their 50s. So anyway, I started this journey in 2009, had gender reassignment surgery in 2010, and we've been living still happily married for 33 years now. Very different kind of relationship. I'm a lot happier, and we're a lot happier. And we have a wonderful son, Daniel, who's 30 years old. He came out here to go to Evergreen State College and now lives in Olympia, who's been very supportive of me. I have been blessed with a family that's loved me unconditionally through this whole journey. That's about all I have to say for my part of this, so I'm going to turn it back to Bruce here.
Okay, thank you. Penny, as I said, you and Kathleen have been here 5 years, and you're now a member of our endowments committee. Thank you for that. But could you tell us a little bit of your life story?
Sure. I was identified as female at birth, and I still identify as female. However, I was married twice, once for 10 years and once for 19 years to men. And when I was 47 years old, I came to the realization that I was a lesbian. It came as quite a surprise to me. And I sort of sat on that information for a while, processed it. And then in 2002, I decided that I wanted to go to a dance. And there was an organization in Seattle called ALPS, Associated Lesbians of Puget Sound. And they had this New Year's Eve party every year at the Seattle Center. And so I was going to get brave, and I was going to go to this alone. I was afraid of dating. I had married alcoholics. I had dated alcoholics. I was really quite concerned that who I was going to be attracted to, and I really didn't want to be in a dysfunctional relationship. And so I wrote down some characteristics that were absolutely essential in a relationship and characteristics of a person that would be deal breakers. And I carried this with me, as I was afraid that if I met someone, I would have this written list I could go to and go, no, I don't think so. But I didn't trust my instincts, but I did trust what I had on this piece of paper. So anyway, I show up at this dance, and that was where I met Kathleen. And we got talking during the evening, and the more I got to know her, the more I realized that she had every single quality that was on my must-have list. And it appeared that she had none of the qualities that were on my deal-breaker list. And she liked me too, I think, because we actually ended up deciding that we would meet the next day for coffee. And we both, I think we must have told each other that night that we had something that we needed to discuss with the other. Both of us were afraid that the other one would go screaming out the door. My concern was that I was new to the lesbian community, and I didn't have much dating experience there. And there is a term that is called curious, and it refers to straight women who are curious about being with another woman. And most seasoned lesbians don't want to be in the position of being the teacher or the experiment. And so I thought that she would just go, eh, I don't want anything to do with you. Well, then, yeah, I got done disclosing mine, and she was still sitting there, and so she had to tell me what she had to say. And that was that she was born male and was transgender. I didn't have a clue, but it did explain her height. It explained a few other things about her, and it made sense. And I don't recall exactly what my reaction was, but I kind of decided I needed to think about this a little bit. And when I got home, the thing that I questioned was really not her, it was me. I said, what does this say about me? What kind of lesbian am I? That I am attracted to someone who is biologically male. And I pulled out that list, and I looked it over, and nowhere on the list did it say that this woman needed to be biologically female. And so anyway, we began dating, and she has just been the most wonderful person that I have ever met. And she's just been, yeah, I could just, superlatives, I could just say, yeah, nothing bad about her at all. But one of the things, like she had mentioned earlier, she wanted to be known as Kathleen. She didn't want to be looked at as somebody unusual. And so part of my responsibility was not telling her story, not telling others that she was transgender. And I discovered there were really no resources for someone like me. There were resources available for her, there were resources available for her children, for her former spouse, the people going through the transition, but not really anything for someone who entered in the last part of the second act. And that was where I was. What I ended up doing was, I've been a member of Al-Anon for many, many years. It's been almost 30 years now. And I used the tools that I learned there for acceptance, not only of her, but also to try to understand what her children were going through, because that was something new to me. You know, I only knew her as female, and her family knew her primarily as male, referred to her as dad. And it's interesting, we get phone calls. Can I speak to my dad, please? Oh, yeah, let me see if she's around. So there was this disconnect on nouns and pronouns, which was actually kind of funny at times. But I did learn how to do some advocating for transgender issues without revealing her story, without revealing why I was interested in this topic. Some people figured it out, some didn't. Probably one of the more interesting things was when she and I got married. We had a religious wedding in 2005 and a legal wedding in 2013. But when we had that first wedding, my family was there and her family was there. And my family, they had a hard enough time dealing with me being a lesbian, much less adding one more layer to this. So they didn't know her background, but yet her children, you know, what if they called her dad? What if somebody on my family said, oh, gee, are you happy for your mom? Well, she's not their mom, she's their father. And so we had a discussion about the English language and how they could use gender-neutral words. There's spouse, there's parent, there's child, there's sibling. We're fortunate, not all languages have that ability. Some of them you have to put an A or an O on the end to know. And we don't have to do that. And so it went well. It went very well, and the kids were, I think, as comfortable as they could be with the situation. It's been an interesting journey. And this is the first time that I have spoken publicly about this part of my life. But I think that in showing our diversity and our unique experience, that we break down the walls of isolation, we grow in understanding, and we realize that we're not alone. So thanks for letting me share with you today.
Thank you, Penny. Cindy would like to hear your story.
Yeah, hi, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, what time of day it is. But anyway, thank you for letting us come and share our personal stories with you, as I think how we can make breakthroughs of a somewhat difficult, very misunderstood topic is by getting to know people personally. And we won't have enough time to even touch the subject this morning. Please feel free. Susan and I are becoming new members of your congregation, and we're delighted. We're delighted. It was this whole path that kind of got us into becoming Unitarian Universalists to begin with. Anyway, I'll keep this brief because we have a limited time. I grew up a Coast Guard brat and moved around a lot, studied Spanish in college, lived in Spain a little bit, and ended up in Key West working on a shrimp boat, of course. Anyway, and then went back to live with my parents in Baltimore and got on the Pride of Baltimore and sailed to the Caribbean, which is where I met Susan, who had sailed on it the previous year and was working on another schooner. We had this very whirlwind nautical romance. She had a beard when I met her. Doesn't look anything like she does now. Had no idea where my life with her was going to take me. It's been quite an adventure, I can tell you that for sure. We decided to get married about a year and a half later, and before we got married, she told me that she had these odd gender issues, whatever, and just felt very comfortable from time to time putting on women's clothing. She didn't quite understand it. There was no internet back in the early 80s, and we didn't know where to find that kind of information or explain it. But I had taken a class in college that mentioned transgender people often committed suicide because they weren't comfortable in the bodies they were born in, and when they transitioned, a lot of society and their families didn't accept them, so a lot of them, losing that connection, would committed suicide anyway. And when she told me that, that was in the back of my head my biggest fear. Her wearing women's clothing wasn't anything I was like really keen about, but there's certainly a lot of other worse habits that partners have. It just scared me that she might at some point end her life because of this. Anyway, we had a son, and I think after his birth, she went through a big depression, realizing that her gender issues weren't going away, and oh my God, now I have this wonderful woman that I love and this baby, and I'm putting this burden on them. And it kicked her into this very suicidal, somewhat state of hopelessness. And so we realized we were living in Baltimore. Hey, Johns Hopkins, don't they deal with transgender people? So we went there. Well, you know, we didn't get the help that I prayed for or that we needed at the time that I wanted it because I wasn't ready for it. You know, I was a young woman with a baby. I don't think we would have stayed together. I don't think our marriage would have been strong enough. But also the doctors in those days, as Susan said, they couldn't picture two women. You know, we're going to put this person through this expensive, difficult surgery and then release them out into the community, and they're going to get eaten alive, because who's going to watch two women raising a kid? It just wasn't going on in those days. And the doctors, honestly, the program is no longer in existence. They just didn't know enough about the transgender issues themselves. And the counseling she got, anybody who's been to see a therapist when you think you're crazy and they give you the wrong advice, it can make you even crazier. Those were the hardest times, I think, for our marriage, you know, living with someone who is suffering, feeling hopeless and helpless that you can't do what you need to do for them. But we went along like Ozzie and Harriet with our kid, and we did PTA, and we did soccer, and we did marching band, and we got him into college. He decided to come out to Washington State, which is why we are here. He went to Evergreen, and in 2009, he had graduated in 2008, and I went through the whole dealing with my parents, and they were both recently deceased at this point. So it's just the two of us. And now we're living our lives, and she couldn't cope with being a man and presenting as a man anymore. And I couldn't cope with living with a miserable person who was, you know, I had my butterfly fly in a jar, and it was dying. And we were both in recovery at this point and not happy. And I was like, you really need to see a therapist and get some help. Not having any idea this is where it was going to take us. But anyway, so she comes home, and I said, hey, how'd that therapy session go, honey? I don't want to talk about it. I thought, oh, good, it's a good one. And 2 weeks later, she said, the reason I didn't tell you about it is because I'm going to change my gender. And I really thought my life was over. Here I'm living on the East Coast, kids on the West Coast, parents are gone. What's going to happen to me? I was selfish. But anyway, our marriage got more honest than it had ever been. And we talked about, well, okay, how can we end this marriage in a healthy way? We have two cars, a futon and a bed. What do you want? What are we going to do here? And we decided we didn't really want to break up. And she said, you know, I'm seeing this therapist and you're invited to come. And she can help keep our marriage together if it's a healthy one. And so we started educating ourselves, and here we are, transgender people, you know, in this relationship, and I had no clue that married couples stay together. I didn't know any. And so this was back in 2009, and so 2010, Susan had just told our son and sent this beautiful letter she had written him to her oldest brother. And we went off to Provincetown for a week-long transgender conference because I saw couples in the picture and significant others get a discount. I'm like, yeah, there's going to be couples there. I need to find another wife who has done this already who can help me, because I don't want somebody who's not happy that their partner is becoming who they're meant to be. When she told me back in 82 that she had always thought she was a girl, I believed her, you know, but we just didn't know how to get the help to get from there to where we are now. And so we went to this Fantasia fair, and we walked around town as for the first time ever as Susan and Cindy, and I had to call my husband her and she and a new name, and I realized by the end of a week I could do it. Because I was kind of scared up until then. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to do it. But we had such a great time. We met other wonderful couples. We sat in on sessions where we talked about very difficult topics, like with the spouses. What does that make me? You know, I don't really feel bisexual or gay, but I'm now living with a woman. There really isn't enough vocabulary in our society. And I honestly, I'm glad it happened when it happened, because I don't give a shit. You know, I'm in church, but I don't care, you know? I want to eat my Cheerios across from the person who I love. And, you know, so we kept going, and we decided, yeah, I know I got to finish up. 2011. On her birthday, we went into the courthouse. Her mom flew over from England in 89 to walk into the courthouse with us for that name-changing situation. We were out of work at that summer, so we decided this would be a good time to drive across country, and we wanted our son to be a part of this journey, not just to say, hey, you know, honey, your dad's no longer your dad, he's your mom. And so we came across America visiting as many family and friends so they could see that we weren't crazy. They could say goodbye to Bob and get to meet Susan. And we went to the Grove of the Patriarchs with our son so we could have a release service with the trees, these ancient trees, and let Bob go. and Let Susan Live, and came back and came out to our town one person at a time. And the most amazing thing that I had no idea in this program, we all said it this morning, what can we do to stretch our hearts enough to lose their littleness? I had no idea how open so many people could be. And as we came out, some people that I thought this was way too huge for them to wrap their heads around, some very older conservative people whose faith told them that same-sex marriage was a big sin, they hugged us and loved us and embraced us. Anyway, I'm very grateful to be a part of a new congregation, and it was in coming out to our town that a Unitarian approached us and said, hey, we're trying to be a diverse congregation and a welcoming congregation, but it's pretty hard to be diverse when we're all alike. We would love a transgender couple. So thank you, Bruce, for inviting us to come and be a part of this group, too.